The Build Act does put a priority on fragile and the poorest countries.
The United States creates its own development plan as China builds. It's Wednesday, October 24th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Coming up, Filipino trust in vaccines drops, living on the water in Kashmir, the business of rice and orangutans, high-tech elephant protection, and cool hazmat suits. It's all on today's VOA Asia. China has been very busy over the past few years, traveling the world to expand its Belt and Road policy. They've spent between $1 and $8 billion on infrastructure projects throughout Africa and Asia. U.S. officials have worried that countries have been falling victim to what they call China's debt trap diplomacy, giving up control of major assets such as ports or roadways when they fund infrastructure projects with Chinese loans that they cannot pay back. Largely in an effort to respond to that growing Chinese influence, the U.S. Senate earlier this month passed legislation overhauling the way the U.S. federal government lends money for foreign development, creating a $60 billion agency. The Better Utilization of Investments Leading to Development, or BUILD Act, creates a new agency, the U.S. International Development Finance Corporation, that consolidates the Overseas Private Investment Corporation, or OPIC, and other government development organizations. Those institutions lend money for projects such as energy, ports, and water infrastructure in developing countries. President Donald Trump last year proposed cutting funding for any new OPIC projects. However, the Trump administration this year has supported creation of the new entity. George Ingram, a global economy and development expert at the Brookings Institution, tells VOA's Ira Melman why the U.S. president changed his mind.
OPIC was created in 1971, and it's got antiquated and inadequate authorities. So the BUILD Act would strengthen OPIC through creating a successor agency that has additional authorities and resources and capabilities that many of OPIC's European sister organizations have. And I think what turned the president around was twofold. One, a lot of people weighed in that we're talking about private investment. We're talking about a mechanism that brings the private sector into helping promote development. And secondly, you know, China is a little bit of a whipping boy, also brought some political ump behind to push this across the finish line.
So let's target a little bit on the differences between the two. We have China spending $1 to $8 trillion, I understand, on its Belt and Road. And here you have how much being spent on BUILD.
Now, what you have with BUILD is the ceiling in the legislation will be increased from $30 billion to $60 billion. So you're going to see this new organization double what OPIC can do in a year, from $2 to $4 billion to $6 or $8 billion. So, you know, pretty small in relationship to what China allegedly is doing.
The target of the Belt and Road so far has been Africa and other areas beside China of Asia. Is that the same target for the BUILD Act?
That's correct. And it's less that it's a target of the BUILD Act. It's the fact that most of the developing countries that need this type of assistance are in Africa and Asia. But the BUILD Act does put a priority on fragile and the poorest countries. And I think that's very important to understand that this is not a mechanism to mainly support middle and upper income developing countries. The Congress has taken a stand that we want to help the poorest countries, the most difficult situations. And while that's difficult to attract private investment there, that should be the priority for this organization.
Draw up for me a picture of the differences between a country that is being helped by Belt and Road and China and by the new U.S. idea.
It's the way the investment is provided. And OPIC and the World Bank's IFC and the European development institutions, they all have pretty solid conditions as to the type of investments they will support. They have to respect the environment. They have to respect labor rights. They have to respect human rights. And those organizations are pretty careful at in scrutinizing investments to make sure that that they are supporting the good corporate behavior. And the difference is with the Chinese is they don't have those explicit conditions on the way they provide assistance. So it's likely a more mixed bag as to the nature of the projects that they support.
Do you expect any countries to leave their arrangements with China if they can and go with this?
I expect a lot of countries will use both services. And I think it will be an evolution of some countries will use China more, other countries will use the IDFC more, and it's going to depend more on countries that have more advanced policies for honoring human rights and labor and the environment, countries that are a little more behind in those conditions will be more content with the Chinese investments. But many countries will be accepting both.
George Ingram, a global economy and development expert at the Brookings Institution. Unlike many issues before the U.S. Congress, the legislation that created the Build Act was written and passed with support from both major U.S. political parties. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. As trade war persists, Japan's Abe heads for first visit to China. Vietnam Parliament elects Communist Party chief as president. U.S. warships sail through Taiwan Strait. China celebrates opening of new mega bridge linking Hong Kong and Macau. Harry and Meghan travel in different style in Australia. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. You'll also find them on our VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The ability to fight any future outbreaks of disease could be at risk following a huge loss of public confidence in vaccines in the Philippines. That's according to a new report from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. The drop in trust could also affect the rollout of future vaccination programs, and researchers say the case of the Philippines holds lessons for other countries trying to tackle deadly diseases, as Henry Ridgewell reports.
In 2015, the Philippines began a large-scale dengue fever vaccination program after a rise in cases of the mosquito-borne disease. But in November last year, the French company Sanofi, which makes the vaccine called Dengvaxia, said it posed a risk to people who had not previously been exposed to dengue fever. After that, concerns began to spread among the public.
At first I was afraid because four of my children had already got the vaccine from the health center.
Other countries adapted to Sanofi's announcement by updating guidelines and labeling. But in the Philippines, public concern turned to outrage, fueled, say the report authors, by a highly politicized response from the government.
This was an opportunity to jump on the previous government for all the wrongdoings. Why did you get this vaccine? And it became an uproar and created not only quite a crisis around this vaccine, but it bled into other areas of public confidence in vaccines more broadly.
The researchers picked up the fall in confidence through their ongoing global survey of public trust in vaccines. In 2015, 93% of Filipino respondents strongly agreed that vaccines were important. This year, that figure has fallen to just 32%, while only one in five people believe vaccines are safe.
This dramatic drop in confidence is a real concern about risks to other diseases, such as measles in the one hand. On the other hand, too, Asia is ripe for a pandemic and influenza viruses to take hold, and in the case of a pandemic or an emergency outbreak, that's not a time when you can build trust.
Larson says misinformation played a big part in undermining confidence.
The role of social media in amplifying those concerns, in amplifying the perception of risk and fears and their public health consequences is dramatic. It's really dramatic.
Immunization programs are being tested to tackle some of the world's deadliest diseases, like malaria. Meanwhile, containing the outbreak of any future pandemic, such as influenza, would likely rely on emergency vaccinations. The report's authors say it's vital that governments and global institutions do more to build public trust in vaccines. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Happening now in Asia, China has opened the world's longest ocean-crossing bridge, a 54-kilometer, $20 billion project connecting the mainland with Hong Kong and Macau, the latest sign of Beijing's tightening grip on its semi-autonomous territories. Chinese President Xi Jinping was present for the ribbon-cutting ceremony. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. For many people, boating is considered a recreational activity. But in many parts of the world, including Srinagar, Kashmir, it's a way of life, giving life on the water a very literal meaning. Lakes in the area have been home to houseboats for decades, and the colorful imagery and designs are a must-see for tourists. VOA Zubair Dar and Yusuf Jamil filed this report, narrated by Bejan Hamdard.
In 1927, the local government in Kashmir barred foreigners from purchasing land. So, British officials working there took to living on the water. Their floating homes, similar to houseboats used in some parts of Europe, soon became a popular tourist attraction and rental property.
The houseboat industry of Kashmir was truly thriving in the good old days. If people of far-off places would talk of anything about Kashmir, it was these houseboats. This industry, representing culture and heritage of Kashmir, was rich in every respect.
Much like homes on land, each houseboat has a living room, dining room, bathrooms, and multiple bedrooms. They are made of seasoned cedar and often designed by hand. Their elegant beauty and charm bring tourists back again and again.
I first came to Srinagar in 1997. I traveled around India for 11 months. Last week, I married Sunita, and for our honeymoon, I suggested we come to Kashmir. She chose to stay in this mascot houseboat, and in the, we call it the honeymoon suite, the best room in the houseboat.
And this is my fifth visit to Kashmir. We first came in 2013 at the end and had a short visit. We stayed on the houseboat for 3 nights.
Despite their beauty, officials say that the houseboats are polluting the lakes, so much so that the local government has banned any repair of houseboats.
The entire waste of the houseboats goes straight into the lake, which pollutes it. We are in an off-season now, but everyone knows that because of the pollution, not many tourists visited Kashmir this year.
Houseboat owners, however, say that their boats are not the main reason for pollution in the lake.
The Indian Institute of Technology, Roorkee, did a survey, and it is mentioned in the report that the houseboats are responsible for only 3% of the pollution in the lake.
Environmentalists note that the city's residents and business owners often dump their waste in the water as well. For now, houseboats are still a tourist destination, but their future relies on a cleaner lake. For Zubair Dar and Yusuf Jamil in Srinagar, Kashmir, this is Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
Coming up, rice isn't the food it used to be. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
This news from VOA Asia. Two U.S. warships sailed through the Taiwan Strait Monday. Pentagon spokesman Colonel Rob Manning told reporters that the USS Curtis Wilbur and USS Antietam conducted what he described as a routine transit to demonstrate U.S. commitment to a free and open Indo-Pacific. Freely visit VOA Asia Facebook each day. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, rice is becoming a bit undercooked in Japan, while an energy project crosses an endangered species. These are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
Farms all over Japan are struggling to survive as farmers age and fewer people go into the industry. The average age of a rice farmer today is 67. Rice consumption has nearly halved over the past 50 years, and as the older generation of farmers and consumers dies out, some fear the industry will be unable to hold its own in a competitive global market. Katsuo Ogura is a rice farmer.
The rice prices have been stagnant in the recent years, which makes farmers' productivity low and cuts down their income, so that they cannot even afford to update farming equipment.
Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's government is trying to make farmers more competitive by scrapping government subsidies, which have helped to control supply and prices for a long time. As the Prime Minister prepares for potential trade negotiations with U.S. President Donald Trump, analysts say he may also have to lower high tariffs on imported rice in order to avoid U.S. duties on other key Japanese exports like automobiles. Japanese consumers are still likely to favor a homegrown variety of rice, experts say. But even so, as the overall consumption of rice continues to decline, the future for farmers remains uncertain. China's large-scale infrastructure drive is sparking fresh concerns in Indonesia over the survival of the world's rarest orangutan. Indonesian firm PT North Sumatra Hydro Energy is building a power plant that will cut through the heart of the endangered animal's habitat. The $1.6 billion project is backed by the Bank of China and a China state-owned enterprise. Conservationists are doing what they can to block the project. Dana Tarragon is the executive director for the Indonesian Forum for the Environment.
The roads they are constructing will divide the habitat so the orangutans won't be able to interact, preventing normal reproduction, and it would lead to the orangutans mating with individuals that are blood-related, and that would accelerate extinction. So the claim that the project is not clearing large area of forest does not hinder the impact of the orangutan.
The Batang Toru project is one of many in Beijing's trademark Belt and Road Initiative, which seeks to link Asia, Europe, and Africa with a network of ports, highways, and railways. The Indonesian government supports building the hydroelectric dam because of the need to improve electricity supply throughout the archipelago, parts of which are regularly plagued by blackouts. While the Indonesian Forum for the Environment has filed a legal challenge against the permit approved by the North Sumatra government, at least for now, the hydroelectric dam is expected to be operational by 2022. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news from VOA Asia. Vietnam's rubber stamp National Assembly elected Communist Party General Secretary Nguyen Phu Trong as the country's president Tuesday. The 74-year-old Trong is the first Vietnamese leader to hold the two positions since founding President Ho Chi Minh in the 1960s. This story and much more are on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, in Tanzania, protecting endangered animals has become easier thanks to Earth Ranger. No, it's not a superhero. It's a technology platform developed by Vulcan Incorporated, a company co-founded by U.S. philanthropist and Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen. The system helps rangers remotely monitor elephants and other animals to stay ahead of poachers. Faiza El-Masri has the story. VOA's Faith Lapidus narrates.
Elephants are among the most endangered animals in the world, a result of ivory poaching, which has caused the population to drop 20% between 2006 and 2015. But now, in the Grumeti Game Reserve in Tanzania, elephants roam freely and safely, as every one is outfitted with a tracking collar. Rangers in the operation room depend on the Earth Ranger tech platform to follow each elephant. In its early stages of development, the platform was named the Domain Awareness System, or DAS.
What we do with DAS is we monitor all our assets, every colored animal, and we also input data, which in turn helps us make decisions and plan operations.
When threats are detected, the system alerts the rangers who are following the data.
Earth Ranger allows you to, it takes you from being reactive and always behind and always after an animal has been killed or a ranger has been injured or killed, to being proactive, to really being able to anticipate and get ahead of the problem.
Earth Ranger not only saves the lives of the elephants, it also protects the staff on the reserve from poachers. Constant and fast communication with the control room makes the rangers' tasks easier and safer. And it helps them use their resources more efficiently and effectively. The developers hope Earth Ranger will provide conservationists in the region the network they need to work together and save Africa's wildlife. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
One of the challenges for health workers who fight highly infectious diseases like Ebola and others is spending time in bulky hazmat suits. They can be unwieldy and incredibly hot, but new technology could solve one of those problems, as VOA's Kevin Enix explains.
For health workers, time in a hazmat suit is very difficult. They're so hot that often workers can't spend more than 15 minutes in a full hazmat suit. And researchers at Stanford University in California say the time they spend getting in and out of the suits is dangerous, because that's when aid workers are most likely to get contaminated. Stanford professor Craig Heller also says working in high temperatures can affect decision-making skills.
When you overheat, your cognitive capacity goes down. You're not thinking straight. So even during the work phase, if you are preventing that rise in core temperature, people are working smarter.
Heller and his colleagues discovered something that may help. While they were looking for ways to warm up patients after surgery, they discovered that every mammal has special places where the body sends its excess heat.
They have developed these special vascular adaptations of the pads of their feet, the nose, the tongue, the ears in some cases, where they can send large volumes of blood to those surfaces and dissipate that heat.
This is why dogs pant after a workout. They're cooling down. And it's part of the reason why elephants have such big ears. But in humans, all that excess heat is being dissipated through their non-hairy areas, the palms of the hand and the face, for instance. But when a person is in a hazmat suit, that heat has nowhere to go, until now.
For someone who is overheating, what they need is an avenue for getting rid of that excess heat, and that's what we provide.
Their self-contained cooling unit consists of a hydration backpack filled with a liter of frozen water, a temperature regulator, and a water pump. The device sends cool water to the hands and draws away hot water. It weighs about 2 kilograms. And that, says Professor Dennis Grand, translates directly to workers being able to spend more time in a hazmat suit, even when working physically hard.
You increase your exercise levels, you're obviously, one, pulling more heat out, and secondly, you don't have the capacity to extract all of that heat out of the body. So, you know, you'll increase the duration by 3x, 4x.
And that extra time could mean saved lives and safer aid workers. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can find us online. You can find us on our Facebook page. VOA Asia streams each and every day on Facebook, as well as our website, voanews.com. You can also find us on many great radio stations around Asia, like DZUP, 1602 AM radio at the University of the Philippines, Diliman in Quezon City. We thank everyone there who's tuned into our program today. And we also thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Rob McClain, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team. That's Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and Doug Bernard. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day.